The name of our podcast, Tech Sequences, is really a mashup of two words, technology and consequences. We are fascinated by the consequences, intended or unintended, of the internet and related technologies for the way we live, play, and work. We are your hosts, Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. We started our careers at the dawn of the internet and have been friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms for the better part of 20 years. In this podcast, we examine the impact internet-related technologies have made or may make in our lives. I'm Alexa Rod.
And I'm Leslie Daigle. Welcome to Tech Sequences. The internet is most often described as a network of networks. The implicit understanding behind this description is that we have this global network because of collaboration and mutually agreed norms that cross corporate and geopolitical boundaries. The technologists who created the internet understood that. As the internet has become a part of the fabric of everyday life across the globe, new generations of corporate leadership and civil governments have had to grapple with whether and how to continue with this model of collaboration with competing interests in their handling of the internet. Previously, we spoke with Maria Farrell about the global political push and pull on the internet governance, and Patrick Feldstrom about collaboration between business competitors to produce open standards for the betterment of all. Today, we have a returning guest to do a deeper dive into the larger picture of collaboration and the internet.
Our guest today is Dr. Konstantinos Komaitis. He is the Senior Director of Policy, Strategy, and Development at the Internet Society and is based in Geneva. Konstantinos leads policy development and coordination on issues relating to the digital economy, including access and competition, intellectual property, technology trade, and internet governance. Konstantinos joined the Internet Society after working as a senior lecturer at the University of Strathclyde in Glasgow, UK. He has a bachelor's degree in law from the University of Thessaloniki. He holds two master's degrees, respectively, in international and European law and in information technology and telecommunications law. He also holds a doctorate, and he is the author of the book, The Current State of Domain Name Regulation. Welcome, Konstantinos.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
It's great. I should say welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
So let's first define what we mean by collaboration. As Leslie alluded to earlier, what are we talking about when we say, you know, there's a history of collaboration on the internet? What kind of collaboration and to what end? Can you give us a couple of real life examples?
So I think that one of the most understated stories when it comes to the internet is that it is a byproduct of collaboration. And it is often missed. And I am getting, actually this morning, I was speaking at a conference and a lot of people were saying, we need to go to the UN because governments need a way to participate in this structure. And I reminded them that actually it was with the participation of the US government at the time that also the internet came about. So the internet is perhaps, if you want, the quintessential example of collaboration in many ways. And this detail often goes very unnoticed. And I believe that we are where we are currently because of that detail, missing that detail.
So what about some international organizations, the standards bodies? For example, Wikipedia, I believe, lists about 160 type of organizations, 106 standard setting bodies, like the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers and the Internet Engineering Task Force, the ITU, International Telecommunications Union. These were all set up to facilitate, I guess, the setting of standards. They were set up perhaps back in another day, maybe some of them, you know, during the internet's heyday, but some dating back even further. How are they managing to accomplish their mission now? Are they still being productive?
So I think they are and they aren't. One of the sad stories I think that is happening in the internet is that as the internet evolves, we are moving more towards silos, and organizations are also moving towards silos. There is a minimum degree of collaboration that needs to happen because they need to keep, you know, operations going, and they need to exchange information in terms of standards. But if you really look the previous, you know, the in the beginning of the internet and what's happening right now, I think we are moving more towards silos, whether it is the IEEE, whether there is the ITU, whether there is the ITF, whether it's ICANN. We are just seeing a little bit that those communities are retreating back to what they know best, because collaboration can be a very uncomfortable and awkward place to be. Simply because you really do not agree on everything and you really need to figure out ways to agree. Now, you brought up Wikipedia, and that would be an excellent example of collaboration, that from the beginning, it was really, really clear that it will be based out of the collaboration of users. The community has managed to come up and self-regulate in ways actually that we have not seen in any other communities, or even the market that we believe that, you know, would be able to self-regulate for many, many years. And it's still going very strong. But all this is happening because there is a common goal. And that common goal is Wikipedia and protecting the integrity of the information that exists within this platform. So we are lacking a common goal, I believe, right now. And a lot of all these organizations will tell you, but no, their common goal is the internet. But I think we lack a clear understanding of what each organization refers to as the internet and what we want to protect.
I think that's really important. Some years ago, Konstantinos, you and I and Phil Roberts wrote a little paper about how to use collaboration to solve wicked problems. And the first two principles, if you will, were that you require a unifying purpose and that involved participants are committed and focused. And I think what you're describing here is that that's what we are lacking. For Wikipedia, people are still committed to having open and free, hopefully correct information about a broad range of topics. But for the internet, is that the network of networks? Is that, you know, services running on top of it? What is the internet?
I think that's right. And And perhaps we should see this as an opportunity, right? It might be time to go back and reflect on what we mean by the internet. I don't think there is one correct answer. I believe that all this organization and all these bodies that are involved, whether we are talking about civil society, businesses, you know, institutions, whoever is talking about the internet, they are coming from a place where they want to preserve what they believe is important to preserve. But unless we come with a clear understanding of what we mean by the internet, then it will be very difficult to move forward and to collaborate. And I see this more and more, especially as currently states are thinking about regulation and everybody's talking about internet regulation. And you realize that much of that regulation, for instance, has nothing to do with the infrastructure of the internet. So if you speak to some bodies that predominantly focus on the infrastructure, they're going to say, okay, sure, they can do whatever they want. But if you speak to some others, they believe that actually what is happening might create some problems. And we cannot have some people participating and some people not participating. We either participate and we get behind something that we all believe, or we just retreat and we don't do that. That is the first point. And the second point that I want to make is we are talking a lot about values, right? And currently, as you both know, everything global is actually in extreme duress, right? The global financial system, the global environmental regime, health system, you know, everything that is global. And inevitably, the internet, being a global medium, sits right in the middle of that. We will not be able, for me at least, better yet, for me, the best way to move forward is if we manage to agree on a common set of values, and that's easier said than done. However, we already have some values that are coming out of the internet. And this is not about convincing China to come behind those values, because China from day one made it very clear in what sort of values they believe when it comes to the internet. But we have a whole host of countries that currently have, and historically have, advocated for an open, global, interoperable internet. Those are values that we can get behind. And, you know, Leslie refers to them as the invariants. other organizations like the Internet Society refer to them as critical properties in conjunction with benefits. There are a lot of people that are talking about these things, but no one is really paying attention that this could become the point where everybody gathers to collaborate.
You know, just recently, Jeff Houston, who is considered, you know, is in the Internet Hall of Fame, has given credit for bringing the Internet to Australia, published a blog in which it was effectively a mea culpa for having a hand in bringing the Internet. And he really portrayed the Internet as having become, I'm going to use my word, but polluted, right? And so far from the initial ideals of what he had imagined. So when you're talking about agreeing on a certain set of principles, are we so far gone?
So I am sure that Jeff knows much more about technology than I do, and he sees things that I certainly do not see. So to the extent that, you know, let's operate on the assumption that the internet to a certain extent is or might be polluted. However, I want to be an optimist and not a pessimist, and I don't want to apologize for working towards ensuring that people get access to something that has changed my life personally to the better and has opened my eyes and has given me opportunities that I never thought that I would be exposed to. I come from a very small place in Greece, and it is because of the internet that currently I am able to do so many things. I have been able to see many things and, you know, my brain actually to expand and to learn so many things. So yes, the internet might be a place that currently feels like it is polluted. It feels like it is, you know, it is not the most beautiful and heavenly place to be, but so is the environment. Are we giving up on the environment? No. Mm. We are working all, we are working towards policies, we are working towards, you know.
Some of us are.
Well, but yeah. Still we are seeing, yeah. You know, yes, of course, and some people will give up on the internet, but I think that generally speaking, we're all working towards trying to save from this planet and try to contribute in making our planet a little bit cleaner from where we're sitting, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a process and it's going to take time. And what I'm hoping is that we are not going to find ourselves in the internet the same way we're finding ourselves in the climate change, saying that unless we act within literally right now, things might not be reversible.
Yeah, and it's the real question, and we touched on this in sort of both previous podcasts in this arc, the real question is when you have competing interests, right? And it's like we've gotten to the point where with the internet, governments are saying, well, this doesn't work for my country, for, you know, my governance of the people of my country. So I need to change this aspect of the internet. And that's a pretty tough argument to counter. And yet we know, we keep coming up with so many examples of how when competing interests collaborate instead of compete, we get something that's much better for everybody. So are you optimistic that we can get there with, you know, with governments coming back to the table and understanding that we need to work together to make this a brighter future? Or
so I don't want to limit this just to governments, first of all. I think that this is a much bigger problem that also includes the market, right?
Yes.
Because a lot of what we're seeing from the governments is very much reactionary to what is happening in the market. Mm. There's a lot of talk, as we all know, about this whole idea of sovereignty. And it is very, very complex and it's very, very tricky. And because here's the thing about sovereignty. By the time you legitimize conversations on sovereignty, especially within the internet, then you cannot impose a certain values on your own values, you know, on everybody else. What I'm trying to say is that we're hearing, for instance, in Europe, talking about digital sovereignty, and they say, we want an internet based on European values. There's nothing wrong with European values. They're actually pretty awesome, right, if you think about it. However, if you legitimize European values, you will also need to legitimize Chinese values and African values and Brazilian values and all the other values. You cannot just, you know, claim superiority over your values against other nation states. So that is the first thing. The second thing is there is a part of me, and I am thinking this more and more, especially because I really think that the conversation of sovereignty will perhaps become the quintessential point of the years to come, and especially on how the internet will evolve, is whether we need to start breaking down sovereignty in its various compartments. And what I mean by that is, if nation states want to retain sovereignty on their infrastructure that is being supported by the internet, then I'm not sure there is anything wrong with that, right? I mean, for Europe or for the United States to say, I want to preserve my infrastructure, and by critical infrastructure, I mean networks, and I mean, you know, water and electricity and all that, and I will apply principles of sovereignty. I am not sure that there is a problem there. I think the problem starts when you start applying sovereignty in the way the internet works and evolves, and that means the way the internet is managed, the way, you know, those critical properties play out. Yes, the way the invariants play out. So if you just suddenly say, you know what, I will tell you, for example, what permissionless innovation means, and that's it. I will not allow the internet to tell you what it is, but I will tell you through a policy. I think that's where the problems start kicking in.
Let's bring up the issue of 5G, right? As you were talking, I was thinking about how there's been such a controversy over Huawei and the 5G network, and how US took a position, effectively maybe trying to establish their sovereignty, but really on the basis of, you know, security concerns that perhaps the Chinese were going to put in back doors and therefore allow this to become a way of, you know, surveillance. So if we try to kind of think about, is this an example of not collaborating? In other words, if we use the whole means of collaboration that you were talking about, the whole principles previously in the past, would we have allowed Huawei to continue? Because we would say, well, you know, may the best firm win, the one with the best technology, the best, you know, services will collaborate. They could build the network here in the US. Or is it actually being reasonable and responsible to think, well, today in the US with the security concerns, with the Chinese really trying to impress their own sovereignty and their own interests, nationalistic interests, we really should be wary and not allow Huawei? What do you think?
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about security, because one of the things that is happening, and it's happening more and, you know, incrementally, it's happening more and more, is the fact that it's security, national security, is being used as a justification to get away with literally anything that you don't want or in the internet. Especially for 5G, there is a competition issue there for me, first and foremost, before there is anything else. And the reaction of the US was mainly on the basis that, well, there were a lot of things in play, but one of them was certainly the fact that China had the competitive advantage in 5G technology and 5G networks for the first time, perhaps, as opposed to the United States. And this, you know, creates a lot of uneasiness, especially when you're used to having the competitive advantage in everything.
Yeah, right.
Now, having said that, it is okay to be cautious, especially if you're dealing with a partner that, you know, that for many, many years has been a little bit, has encouraged policies and has pushed things that are a little bit questionable. But I would think that you conduct an impact assessment exercise and you actually do identify the real problems versus the ones that you're using as a justification because you are in a trade war. What I'm trying to say is that in the specific situation, what happened with Huawei and what's happened also with TikTok and what happened also with WeChat is that it was all playing into this narrative of China is literally surveying all our citizens. when we actually do know that the United States was doing that, right? I mean, that's what Snowden did. Mm-hmm. And using that hysteria, if you want, collaboration took another phase. Suddenly we saw the United States pulling its persuasive authority over its allies to try to actually to convince them to follow suit. This is not collaboration. This is actually someone coming down. This is top-down, exercise of top-down power in many ways, right? Collaboration means that you are having these very awkward discussions. You measure things, you focus on what you want, and the greater good is much, and you work for the greater good as opposed to your own individual good, which seems to be the case with the US and its treatment on 5G. Mm.
And that's a really good example. I'm glad you brought that up, Alexa, because it's a really good example of where both the private world and, you know, corporate economics collide with the international politics and economics. And I agree with you, Konstantinos, that the notion that you can't have 5G built on Huawei equipment because it's spying on everybody and has backdoors is like everything built in the US has got backdoors. We just don't know what they're doing with it.
Exactly. I think that this is, you know, sitting on your high horse and telling other people not to do what exactly you're doing, or believing that, you know, your actions are more justified than others. At this stage, it is very important. And it goes back to what we're saying, right? As long as you have this clear focus and you're all working towards that focus, you can figure out how to do things, but we're lacking clear focus. So right now, and this is what really keeps me up at night, is the fact that we are seeing some state actors actually going out there and trying to score political points by doing things that in the long term are going to actually adversely affect the internet. And you know, and I'm talking about the US Clean Initiative Act. I am talking about the attempt again to ban TikTok and WeChat. Right. 5 years ago, we would never have thought that this would ever happen, right? I mean, you would work through other channels in order to figure out how you can compromise and find a solution that is not so extreme. Right now, we're bouncing from one extreme to the other, and we live in interconnected world, guys. So
yeah, and there's a lot that I wouldn't have believed 5 years ago, but welcome to 2020. But I think there are a couple of important things I would want to pull out of that. One, this whole notion of banning Huawei and 5G means that we are in fact delaying the rollout of 5G across the globe. And now there's a lot of hype involved with 5G and who knows what it's actually going to be. And that's a whole different other story. But the practical implication of this means that there are people in rural areas, for instance, that are going to continue to have crappy internet service because we're not advancing the overall state of deployment. So if we had proper collaboration and cooperation across companies, we could see much more advancement of that technology. And then to your point about the tactics here and how 5 years ago it might have been a question of trying to figure out a different way to have the discourse and dialogue and solve the problems behind perceived problems, any real security problems with TikTok and WeChat by other means, I think really brings into focus this notion of collaboration is about, as you said, focusing on an agreed end goal that is not about individual gain. And what we're seeing now instead is basically people picking up their toys and tossing them across the playground.
Yes, and what really concerns me is the fact that acts of that sort are dividing the world. And, you know, at some point there will be some countries that will need to make a choice. And that choice will be, am I going with what this cohort believes, or am I going with what this cohort believes?
Right.
And in interconnected world like currently we live in, it's going to create a lot of tension, and it's going to create a lot of, you know, of pressure. I think that Maria, in her own podcast, she referred to it as the weaponization of interconnectedness, I believe it was, interdependence. So there is a lot to be said and a lot to think of what we're doing now is going to define the things that are going to happen in 5 years' time, right? Because I think that we have entered a path where, and I really hope that I am mistaken here, the internet is at the verge of getting split up into smaller islands, and the pressure is coming from everywhere. It's coming from laws, it's coming from technologies, it's coming from the market. Currently, the internet is in the middle of, is in the midst of all that. It's still resisting. And if there's one thing that literally COVID proved was that the internet perhaps was the only thing that was prepared for this pandemic. Nobody else was. Governments were not. The market was not. The health systems were not. No one was not.
Cruise lines.
Right? Yeah. The internet was ready. But there is a very valid question to be asked. And Leslie, you know, you're the engineer here. You know, how much pressure can the internet really afford? I mean,
yeah, and I think the real question here is, how do we re-articulate what the target is and get everybody, and that's, you know, everybody to buy into it. And by everybody, I mean different countries, different governments, different companies, right? I mean, the internet has been, the internet as we knew it a decade ago was a very fertile piece of land, right? It was a field, an open field, and some companies have come along and sown their particular crops in it, and you know, are fine with poisoning it for everybody else. And that's the mentality that we have to stop. It's not about how do you break up those individual companies. At least my brain's not big enough to figure out how to do that. But rather, how do we get everybody's focus on making sure that we're not just, you know, leaching all the nutrients out of the field that is the internet?
Yes. For me, the question that I think that the core question, since we're talking about the market and big companies, has always been, how do you hold these companies accountable to the internet? These companies literally used the properties and or the invariants, call it whatever you want, those things that have allowed them to become what they are. They became what they are because the internet is designed and has features that has allowed them to do that. And by the time they became big, they turned their backs against all these principles. So if you take permissionless innovation, for instance, you know, that we all agree is a core aspect of what this network of network is, or decentralized management. Currently, we are seeing huge amounts of centralization within these companies, and permissionless innovation is a chimera. You really need to ask permission to do everything, even
and
to
the answer
dream.
Is no.
And most probably the answer will
give me,
be no.
Give me an example. Like what companies are you talking about? What kind of permissionless?
From, you know, from Apple's, from the Apples of this world to even Facebook to anyone, you need to ask if you want to operate within their system.
Yeah,
you know,
Amazon, AWS. Build,
exactly. You want to build an API or you want to, you want to exist within the cloud. You really need to go back there and say, you sign contracts, terms and conditions, very, very clear. Those are the boundaries that you can operate under, and that's it. So,
well, I mean, as an example, as a very concrete example, about 5 years ago or so, Twitter and Facebook basically took down their APIs, right? So it used to be that you could do something in one service like Twitter and then use a tool, some non-Facebook tool, to cross-post to Facebook, right? And a lot of people did that because they wanted their same content to show up everywhere. And then all the APIs were shut down because companies other than Facebook and Twitter were taking advantage of the Facebook and Twitter content. And they said, nope, just us benefiting from our content. So, I mean, that's an example of how the innovation has been shut down. And the problem we'll never here, know what could have been built out.
And the problem here is, if I may add something, Leslie, that innovation now has moved there, unfortunately, for better or worse, right?
Yeah. So
they have managed also to displace in many ways where innovation is happening. So in the beginning of the internet, we're seeing innovation within the networks, and we're seeing all these things happening, and there was network growth, and people wanted to join, and people wanted to do exciting things because they were seeing all those things, and they were operating on the basis that, oh, if we go back to Leslie's invariants, there are no permanent favorites. As new as the new shiny toy pops up, you know, it's going to replace. So people were thinking and they were contributing to the network. Right now, there are a few people that are actually contributing to the network, and innovation is happening within those clusters of closed system, walled gardens, call them whatever you want. And that is a problem because, you know, if you don't have the network, you don't have those systems, essentially. And I'm not saying that you should not innovate there, but certainly you cannot turn your back at what is happening at the core, at those foundational elements of the internet, because then the internet is going to become a supporting thing and not the main tool. And this can be a problem.
So let's disrupt. It's the only answer. I mean, the internet was a disruptive force at the outset, and maybe trying to convince existing large companies that it's not in their best interest to try to strip mine the internet is never going to work. And we need to find everybody else. And it, because it is amazingly powerful. What happens when you get the energy of a large group of individuals, how much can actually happen?
I agree. I listening to us, I kind of feel like, at least, you know, the three of us believe that everything is connected. We believe in the, you know, founding ideals. Yet at the same time, I can't help but think that we kind of sound like those folks who opined for the old Roman Republic when the barbarians were crawling up the gate. You know, it's like, is it too late now? And if it's, you know, like you said, Leslie, I mean, these guys who strip mined the internet because of the fact that it was an open playing field, it was very equal, are now the very ones that are benefiting because of their size. The fact that they collect so much data that's created this data vortex is only enabling them to become more and more successful and really putting up barriers to their competitors. So going to them and talking about the ideals of the internet will probably fall on deaf ears. How do we disrupt? I mean, is this a matter of sort of waking up every netizen and saying, you know, your every micro action has sort of a corresponding and cascading impact? So sort of like, everyone, let's vote. Is this a kind of clarion call?
So I think that a couple of things come to mind, and I don't think that either of them is going to give the answer, you know, a definitive answer. The first one is that, you know, what we were discussing in the beginning, we really need to go back and figure out what we mean by the internet. I think that this is a very good starting point, right? Because literally, if you ask my mother, and I always bring her up as an example, she will be very proud of me. She will say that the internet is Google. Because literally, that is the only thing that she is doing. She's on Google and she's putting terms and she's doing the search. If you ask people in the Philippines, they will tell you that Facebook is the internet.
Right.
And here we're having a completely different conversation where we're seeing a much broader sense of the internet with particular focus on the infrastructure. So I think that starting this conversation on what we mean by the internet could be a very healthy starting point. And the second point that I want to make is that, yes, I occasionally feel myself that I sound like a broken record and I am so outdated and old-fashioned that it makes me feel literally my age. However, if there is one thing that I've learned from being Greek is that in times of doubt about the future, always go back to the history in order to redefine and see who you are and where you come from in order to be able and go forward. And I think that I would like to think that the same should happen in the internet. We cannot discount that future because, you know, it is not by accident that these properties that were established 50 years ago for the internet are still valid in 2020 with everything that has happened. And with everything that is happening, it is these properties that still keep the internet going. So I think that it will be a huge I don't know, omission of sorts if we stop thinking about all those things that define the internet.
Don't be defeatist is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm trying to be optimist.
Optimistic, yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think it's a really fair point. It's like, what do you want the internet to be for you, the netizen, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's figure it out and, you know.
This is the wonderful thing about the internet, because occasionally I have to admit in my very weird world, I sort of put a face to the internet and I see a very beautiful woman in front of me who says, it's up to you. You do what you want to do, but be ready for whichever way you choose, it's gonna go, right? So you have the ability to shape this, but you need to be careful of which direction you take.
Consequences of the directions.
Exactly.
Aha!
Texsequences.
Yeah, texsequences.
Texsequences.
It has been a delight. I think Indeed. You are the only guest so far that we've had on twice. So thank you very much. It's been lovely talking to you. Always very, very interesting. And I love the sort of the sense of optimism that you bring, and also the sense of history, being a Greek.
Well, thank you very much for having me two times. And I am very much looking forward to coming back again at some point.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Great.
Thank you.
Have a great one. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this TechSequences podcast. We are Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. You can reach us by email, techsequences@techsequences.org. We'd love to hear from you to know what you thought about this episode or ideas for future episodes. TechSequences. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe through your favorite podcasting service.